Every day, my company gets scam phishing emails trying to get money or sensitive info. I wanted to protect my employees and my clients, so I checked out CISA's Secure Our World. They've got simple ways we can protect our businesses from online threats. First, teach employees to recognize and report phishing. Next, require strong passwords plus multi-factor authentication. And finally, turn on automatic updates for your business software. To learn more, go to CISA at cisa.gov/secureourworld.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thanks for listening to the Legacy Church Podcast. We hope that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life. Follow us on social media at Legacy Church GA or visit lcga.info to learn more.
I want to ask you just really a straightforward question as we get into the teaching this morning, and it is this: why do you live where you live? Why do you live where you live? Whether it's a townhome or a house or an apartment or whatever it is, why do you live there? Now, Megan and I, we moved into our house back in the 1st of January, and as we were looking for a house, you know, we knew that we needed a little bit more space for our family as we're growing. We needed a little bit more space for that. And so, you know, there were certain things that would accommodate that. And you know, one of those also was, you know, we'd like to have maybe a pool in the neighborhood, because it'd be a great way for to meet other families in the neighborhood and to just have something to do in the summer, you know, to be engaged in that. And so those were just a couple of things. And if you've been, you know, maybe you can think back and when you were looking for your current place that you live in, and maybe there were some things that you had a list of as far as must-haves. You know, sometimes people have a must-have list, and then they have a list of like, well, these are kind of things I would like to have. And you look through those lists as you are searching for a place to live. But maybe you think about that. I want you to turn to the person next to you and just sort of answer that question to them. You know, why do you live where you live? What was it that came to that decision? Go ahead, right now, person next to you. All right. And maybe you answer no, it was something in the house that we liked. We liked the kitchen, or we liked the basement, or there was an extra room for the home office, or enough space in the garage, or whatever it was that you answered that. And, you know, however you answered that question, in any of those ways, reflects, I think, a mindset that we all have. And that's as we answer that question as a consumer. And a consumer answers that question in the manner of, you know, what is it that's going to benefit my life? And, you know, those are not bad things. But the problem is that consumer mindset isn't just relegated to where we buy a house or maybe the kind of car we're looking for, or the where we shop, or where we make decisions on where to eat, or any of those things. But oftentimes, that consumer mindset is taken into our spiritual lives. But let me give you an example. Whenever you are looking for a church, what do we call that? What's the name for that? Church shopping, exactly. We call it church shopping, which is always kind of interesting, because it's like, church shopping, like you go from, if you're shopping, you go from store to store, and if you like what you see there, if you like the product, what happens? You buy it, And so I've always wondered, how does that translate into church shopping? Now, I know, that there's good intentions behind that. You want to find a place that you feel like you can belong and connect to and grow in your faith. But I've always been intrigued by the reality that when we call it church shopping, it sort of just says, well, yeah, we're consumers when it comes to our spiritual life, too. And the problem is that's not healthy. And when we become a consumer, we ask that question of how does it benefit me, right? And the focus is on me. And the question is, how does this fill me up and make me feel better? And you think about the contrast between a consumer and a contributor is pretty stark. Now, a consumer asks the question of how does this benefit me in my life? But a contributor, a contributor asks really an opposite question of how can I benefit the lives of others? I got a chart here that sort of shows the difference between consumer and contributor. A consumer says, well, I'm here to be served. But a contributor says, no, I'm here to serve. A consumer says, I want it to be focused on my preferences. A contributor says, no, I want to be focused on the needs of others. A consumer asks, what can I gain? But a contributor asks, what can I give? A consumer feels a sense of entitlement, but a contributor feels a sense of gratitude. A consumer often has trouble finding a church family, but a contributor joins the church family and invites others. See, I think what we're dealing with here is really kind of something that's at the root of all of us. And that is a sense of selfishness. I think we all have a sense of consumerism. I think it's really at our core. And there's really sort of a deep-rooted selfishness in all of us. If you don't believe me, just have a kid. Okay, because when you have a kid and they become like the toddler, maybe a 2 or 3 year old, they're that age, you notice this deep-rooted selfishness that is inside of them. And you wonder, where did this come from? You buy them some candy. Oftentimes, we'll buy Jude some candy and we'll ask for some of the candy. Hey, would you share with Dada? I'd like to have some of that candy. And there's this reluctance that comes over him. And he might give me one piece out of maybe 50 in the bag. It's like, well, Jude, I was hoping for maybe more than one piece of candy because, like, Jude, did you know where that candy came from or how that candy was acquired? Like, Dada bought that candy with his money, so really, we could say that candy belongs to me, and I'm just sort of letting you have it, so you should feel grateful, and in return for your gratitude, I just spit, give me some of that candy. But selfishness really is in all of us, if we're honest, that sense of selfishness doesn't stop with a toddler. I mean, it goes from 2 to 12 to 22 to 82. It's not relegated to age. But the reality is that we live in a consumer-minded culture. And the church is not immune to it. Consumer Christianity is really now the norm. One of my favorite theologians and authors, Dallas Willard, said it this way. He said, consumer Christianity is now normative. The consumer Christian is one who utilizes the grace of God for forgiveness and the services of the church for special occasions, but does not give his or her life and innermost thoughts, feelings, and intentions over to the kingdom of the heavens. Such Christians are not inwardly transformed and not committed to it. Consumer Christianity is really the norm. But my hope today is that we will see that Jesus brings us a better way. A way that is not filled with questions about how does this benefit me or what can I gain from it, but a way that sees our very life for purposes greater than ourselves and a call to live our life for something greater than ourselves. Because I believe that while selfishness is at the core of all of us, there's also something at the core in all of us that wants to be part of something that is greater than us. And I would even venture to say that that's why you're here. That you sense that there's something greater in your life than just your little world and your plans and agendas and desires, that you want to be part of something that's bigger than that. And I believe Jesus brings us that. And this better way is a movement that he started with a band of just ordinary people, men and women, who were not, you know, they weren't the smartest in the world. They weren't the most educated. They weren't the most talented. They weren't the most gifted people, but they had a lot of passion and commitments to Jesus. And that commitment to Jesus, they ended up giving their life for it. About a dozen ordinary people, Jesus sent out on a mission to change the world. And we are sitting here in this room in Canton, Georgia, because of that. Just think about that for a moment. That the commitment of a dozen people and then a few dozen people, men and women, to give their lives for the cause of Jesus, to spread his message, to reflect his life, and to live for him, caused a movement that has spread all around the world for 2,000 plus years, right down to this very moment that we're sitting here, because of the faith and commitment and passion of a group of ordinary people, just like you and me, who wanted to change the world, who did change the world. We're starting this brand new series over the next few weeks called Love Where You Live. And I want you to think back to that question I asked at the beginning of why do you live where you live? And though we may have answered that question in terms of what it benefited us or how we were benefited by it or what we were gaining from it or what we liked about that place, my hope is that today we start to think about where we live, not in terms of what we get from it, but what we can give to bless others. There's this encounter in John chapter 4 between Jesus and a Samaritan woman, and Jews and Samaritans were not to associate with one another. That's the first thing. And Jesus has this encounter with this woman who's coming to get water at a time of day that no one would notice her because she was a social outcast. She was not only a Samaritan, but she had been married and divorced multiple times, and she's coming out to get water hoping that she doesn't encounter anyone. It's kind of like, okay, this is the safe time of day where nobody's going to notice me, nobody's going to question me, nobody's going to criticize me. But Jesus is there. And Jesus asks her for a drink, and she's like, no, you don't understand. Like, you, a Jew, are asking me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink. You know, we don't do that sort of thing. And Jesus says to her, though, if you knew really what you were asking for, then you would ask for living water, because the water I can give you will never leave you thirsty, never leave you dry. This water, this is living water. This living water, you will never be thirsty again. That it will well up, Jesus says, to a spring of eternal life. And she says to Jesus, she says, well, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water. And see, Jesus often taught using physical things to talk about the spiritual realm. And initially this woman's like, well, what's he talking about water? I mean, yeah, like I'd like to have water that would never leave me thirsty and I don't have to come here again. She's thinking about the physical world of having to come there every day to get water. And Jesus is like, no. I'm talking about something entirely different. This is in the spiritual realm. And Jesus would use physical things to talk about spiritual realities. He uses water here, and the water is not just, you know, it's not just about drinking water from our tumbler. But Jesus is talking about drinking from his life, the spiritual nourishment, so that we would never have to thirst again, that our hearts would be content. And he uses water for that. He also uses light elsewhere. And that light represents the very presence of God. And so he talks about light in those terms. And then in just a few more verses, he's going to talk about food. But Jesus has this encounter with this woman who they were not to associate with each other. So he says, I've got water that's going to leave you with an eternity. Then going down to verse 27, I'll pick it up there. His disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman, but no one asked, what do you want or why are you talking with her? See, again, we have to remember that women in this culture were lower class. Okay? Just the fact that he's talking with a woman is incredible. Verse 28, then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. Then his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? My food, said Jesus, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. I love the disciples because they're a lot like us. I mean, they just think in terms of practice, right? Practical things like give him something to eat. Could someone have brought him food? You ever been with a group of friends and somebody's like sneaking a sandwich, but they didn't bring enough for everybody, and it's like, well, where's, you know, you're not bringing any to share with us. We're all hungry too. Like, you know, that's what maybe the disciples were like, look, could someone have brought him food that we didn't know about? Maybe he's got the Cliff Bar, you know, that he just kind of had as a meal. It's got plenty of protein, and that'll sort of fill him up for the day. I don't know if they took inventory of food, but the disciples were wondering, where did he already eat? And we didn't know about it. Did Jesus just sneak off to the side and catch lunch and we didn't notice? We've been away, now we've come back, and suddenly is he not hungry? See, but Jesus is talking about the physical to teach the spiritual, and he says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Elsewhere in Matthew chapter 4, in the temptation account, Jesus quotes from Deuteronomy 8, and he says, man does not live on bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Now, Jesus, in his humanity, being fully human and fully God, had needs, physical needs that we have. He did get hungry. It's not like he went without food, just never ate. But here he says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. When was the last time that you were so excited about something that you forgot to eat? Maybe you're engaged. Maybe some of you are like, no, I've never forgotten to eat. I mean, that's just, you know. But when was the last time you were so engaged in something? Maybe it was a project or you're doing something and you're locked in, you're focused, and you look at your watch and it's like, oh man, it's 2:30. Lunch just totally passed me by. And you were so engaged in that you just forgot to eat. See, Jesus is engaged in the mission that he's been given. Jesus says, look, the time is now to reap the harvest. See, in that culture, Jesus comes from the agricultural mindset of you sow the seed, but you don't reap the harvest right away. Usually there are several months that pass, and then you reap the harvest. And so there's a time for sowing, and there's a time for reaping. What Jesus is telling his disciples is, look, now is the time for reaping the harvest. He sees right in front of him that the time is now to reap the harvest, to gather people into God's family. This is a contributor mindset. See, if we're going to have a contributor mindset, we've got to see with spiritual eyes that the harvest is now, that now is the time of the harvest, meaning that now is the time to reach people with the message of Jesus. Because a contributor mindset comes from knowing your purpose. Jesus said, no, my food, the way I'm sustained, ultimately, is to do the will of him who sent me. Jesus was so locked into God's will and purpose for his life. And he said, now is that time. The harvest is now. Do you know your purpose in life? You say, well, what do you mean? My purpose is to be a father or a spouse, or my purpose is to be a good employee, or my purpose is, you know, just to be a nice person. But God has given us such a bigger purpose than just that. And could it be that the things that we identify with as our purpose in life are just secondary, subservient to a greater purpose of living on mission for Jesus? Living as people who know our purpose, to do the will of God. That was Jesus' singular purpose in life, on this earth. While he was on this earth for 33 years, he knew that he was here to do the will of him who sent me, of God. Have you ever wrestled with that? Have you ever wrestled with the question of what is my purpose in life? Why has God put me here? Or, like we're asking in this series, why do I live where I live? I want to suggest to you it's not because of the kitchen that drew you to that home, or the extra space, or the basement, or the neighborhood, or the schools, or the proximity to your job. But it is to help you fulfill the mission of Jesus. What if you began to think of it that way? See, Jesus was sent to pour out his life. He said, my purpose is to do the will of him who sent me. I have come elsewhere. He says, I have come not to be served, but to serve and give my life as a ransom for many. I'm not here to sit on a throne and receive the service. That's why when he got down at the Last Supper to wash his disciples' feet, they became indignant. They're like, no, we should be washing your feet. Like, Jesus, you've got this backwards. Like, you're the teacher, we're the students. The students don't wash the teacher's feet. You've got this all backwards. And he's like, no. I'm doing this to show you so that you would do it to others. And so Jesus' pouring out his life was not just that they would witness inspirational acts and miracles and hear the teaching. It's ultimately so that they would go and do the same. Jesus was sent to pour out his life. This woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, was sent to tell people about Jesus. Look back at verse 29. She goes back to her home, back to the town, and she says, come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And she found Jesus that day because he sent her, just like he was sent. Over 40 times in John's gospel, we read about Jesus and his being sent, or his sentness. John 20, verse 21, perhaps the most clear vision of sentness. Jesus said, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. It wasn't just that people would be inspired and say, well, wasn't that great? I mean, didn't that, you know, that whole miracle was amazing, and yeah, we thought we didn't have enough food, and then Jesus just fed everyone. Wasn't that great? I mean, remember that time? It wasn't just so that they would just have reunions and recall the great events of Jesus' day and just have a bunch of memories. It was so that they would have a mission. Because memories are not life-changing, but a mission is. And Jesus says, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. See, because God sins. God sent Jesus. And Jesus turns around and says, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. N.T. Wright says it so well. He says, the point of receiving the Holy Spirit, it's clear, is not to give the disciples new spiritual experiences, though to be sure they will have plenty. Nor is it to set them apart from ordinary people, a sort of holier-than-thou club, though to be sure they are called to live the rich, full life of devotion and dedication that is modeled on Jesus' own. The point is so that they can do in and for the whole world what Jesus had been doing in Israel. As the Father has sent me, so I'm sending you. Our God is a sending God. And we are a sent people. See, we've got to live a countercultural life as sent people. God is calling us to a countercultural way of living, to be contributors and not consumers. And if that wasn't already clear, the last few years, God, I mean, if he can't get our attention now, I don't know when. That we are to be a sent people, sent into this world where we live and work and play to join him in what he's doing, to bring about change and transformation, to bring a slice of heaven to earth. Why do you live where you live? Could it be that you live where you live because you are a sent people? We are a sent people. Could it be that you live where you live because God is calling you to live a countercultural life, to be a contributor, not a consumer? I love this quote from Howard Snyder. He says, church people think about how to get people into the church. Kingdom people think about how to get the church into the world. Church people worry that the world might change the church. Kingdom people work to see the church change the world. You see the difference between consumer and contributor? Sees the very reason that we exist is to change the world. Because it is a message that changes the world. Like what I said a few minutes ago, we're here in this room because it is a life-changing, world-changing message. The good news of Jesus that we are called to carry to every corner of the world, starting with the place we're at right now. You ever thought that maybe your mission is to be Jesus to the people you encounter in your everyday life? That you might be the only picture of Jesus that they see. So are you reflecting him? Do people get an accurate picture of Jesus through your life? I think they're playing with basketballs, or I don't know what's happening next door, but it's very engaging, very active. It's probably my son throwing something. Friends, I want us to be a people who think about how to get the church into the world. And I think you do too. I think you want to be a part of something that's bigger than yourselves. I believe you want to be part of something that is greater than just your plans, your agenda, your desires. I think you want to be a part of something that is world-changing. So I just have this question. I would love for us to wrestle with this. And maybe if you need to take a picture of this, what if you began to view your neighborhood and city not just as a place where you live, but a place where you have been sent to love the people where you live? When Megan and I moved to Chicago 7 years ago now, a little over 7 years ago, we lived in a little tiny apartment. 600 square feet, plenty of space for bonding, getting to know one another, the first year of marriage. And, you know, I was a little bit zealous, and I said, let's take cookies to our neighbors. And, you know, in Chicago, people are a lot more suspicious of you and your intentions. And so, you know, I took cookies to the neighbors. There was about 12 apartments in the building. And, you know, several people were like, are you selling these? And no, we're just giving them to you. Like, you know, we're moved in upstairs, and we're in 306. And, you know, if you need anything, just let us know. And we took the cookies to the lady, one of the ladies that lived on the first floor, older lady. She was handicapped and had some health issues and cancer. And her name was Flo. And Flo just came to find out she was Muslim. And you know, she found out that I was a pastor, and I gave her my phone number, which I regretted a few times because she did call it. You know, I thought, I'll just give her my phone number. Like, they never actually call, but it's like, oh, it's a thing you do to be nice. Oh, this, if you ever need anything, like. But she did call, and one time she called, she said, I got some spaghetti I'm making down here. You know, would you and your wife like to have some? And I'm talking like Italian homemade spaghetti, you know, the real deal. And so we went down and just got into a conversation, and, you know, we started talking about Jesus. And, you know, she wanted me to read the Quran, and you know, I took it, and, you know, I said, okay, you know, I'll read some of this if you read the scriptures, you read the Bible. And, you know, I wish I could tell you, oh, she came to faith and like, she was baptized, but we had a lot of conversations about Jesus. But the point of this story is I believe God put us there to be a light to her. And she didn't have any family. Her son lived with her, but other than that, no family, and nobody would, you know, come to see her. We never would notice any visitors coming in and out. I don't think her family really wanted anything to do with her. But, you know, I thought about that as I was preparing this week, and, you know, why would God put us in the apartment building and, you know, in that place to meet this woman? And, you know, my first temptation was just to like, oh, you know, she would never consider Jesus, and maybe she would even be offended that we would discuss Jesus, but we talked about Jesus, and I don't know what happened with her. I have no idea, but I think God puts people in our lives like that. Neighbors, coworkers, people that he puts in our life to give something to give of ourselves. So I want us to live sent. That's what I want us to walk away with today, to live sent. To live as people who are sent by Jesus to the places we live, work, and play, to be agents of transformation, to bring heaven to earth. So how do you live sent? I've got just a couple of real, real practical things that I want to challenge us to engage in. And the first is just acts of service. Acts of service. Maybe you notice an elderly neighbor needs their yard mowed, or someone can't go and get groceries, or there's a child in your neighborhood that needs encouragement, or you notice, you know, someone's got something broken and you can fix it. But that you would be aware of the needs and just to meet a need. You know, see a need, meet a need. So think about your neighborhood right now. Maybe something comes to your mind that, oh, well, I noticed, you know, my neighbor, their downspout is cracked, and I could easily replace that. Or you know, there's an elderly person at the end of the street that their yard needs to be mowed. And maybe you could do that. So I believe there's acts of service every single day. And we think, well, it's just mowing a yard. It's never just mowing a yard. It's never just bringing groceries to someone. It's bringing little deposits of hope into people's lives. So what is the need that you can meet this week? This week. The second thing is that you would begin to pray for your neighborhood. Maybe you already do this, and that's great, and continue to do that. Maybe invite others, but maybe if this is something new for you, that you would begin to pray for your neighborhood, and just to start with the 8 closest houses. Maybe the 8 closest houses around you, that you would pray for those houses. And you say, well, I don't even know the person that lives in those house, that house, but God knows their name. And so until you get to know their name, you can pray for that house. Lord, the couple with the blue car, or the teenager that comes home from work that I see, or whatever, the kid that plays in the yard, the 8 closest houses, that you this week would begin to pray, and even go on a prayer walk. Take a walk down your street, and just as you pass by a house, you pray for that house and the people in that house. And if you know the people's names, that you bring their name before the Lord. If you don't know their names, you say, God, would you give me an opportunity just to learn their names? And don't be the annoying neighbor, okay? We want to bring people to Jesus, not push them away. Don't smother them, okay? Don't smother them. But if you're taking a walk and you see the neighbor outside, maybe say, hey, I know we've lived down the street for maybe years, but I don't know your name. I want to get to know your name. We've got to start somewhere. 8 closest houses. There's a website I want to encourage you to check out. It's called blesseveryhome.com. Blesseveryhome.com. You go to this website, and you can put your email in, and it will send you, every day, it will send you prayer prompts for specific addresses around yours. And you can pray for specific addresses around your home. They've got some other resources on there to help, you know, maybe start conversations with your neighbors, but it's a great starting place, blesseveryhome.com. I want to encourage you, go to that site, check it out, put your email in, and you'll get an email every single day. You'll get an email with specific addresses, and it's a great way to remind ourselves to be praying for the people who live around us. So I want to encourage you, you know, to think about the place that you live as being for the purpose of being on mission with Jesus. So acts of service, what can you do this week to meet a need? And then prayer, because we need to be people who receive power through prayer. So why do you live where you live? Why do you live where you live? And my prayer is that as we've asked that question, that it's starting to shift, that we would see our places that we live as not being for what we get out of it, but what we can give to be a blessing. To be a blessing to the places we live, to our neighborhood, to our city, and ultimately to the world. So let's live as sent people. Let's live as sent people. Will you pray with me? Father, we ask that you would open our eyes, Lord, to see spiritual truths. You would open our eyes to needs that we can meet right in our neighborhoods, Lord. That we would see ourselves as being catalysts for changing the world, to taking the church into the world. Lord, that we would see our lives as being for the purpose of being on mission with you. Lord, and just that you would give us opportunities to be a blessing to the people around us. Lord, and just I pray that every person in this room would see themselves as being sent. So give us the courage, Lord, to live as sent people. Give us opportunities to meet a need. Give us opportunities to be a blessing this week, Lord, even today. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We hope that you have enjoyed this message and pray God's blessing upon you. Remember to follow us on social media at Legacy Church GA or visit lcga.info to learn more.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.